The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It was just over a decade ago that the housing market collapsed. Prices plunged and millions of homes went into foreclosure. Are we in for a repeat? That question is starting to be asked.
Life as you've never heard it. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show.
Yeah, my producer Tom and I were talking about that this morning. You know, a lot of foreclosures on the rise. Scary thought. Markets are continuing to climb, though, right? In a minute, Peter Grandis is going to join me. Bitcoin is another thing. I mean, I was looking at Bitcoin. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. I remember when it was down at 35,000. It was at 72,000 and 73,000. Can you imagine if your stock moved $1,000 in like a day or even a week, even a year? I mean, what's up with Bitcoin, right? It's been a roller coaster movement this week on the market. The way they look, you know, you think the economy is going gangbusters right now and that everybody's bursting with cash. Two reports that are out that kind of indicated that's not the case. Fox Business reported that a Vanguard Group report showed that there's been a record number of people making emergency withdrawals from their 401k. Now, if you don't get that money back in, you're going to be taxed out the wazoo on that one, right? It's not a good thing. But look, if you got to keep your house from foreclosure, you have to put food on the table or something else, I understand people saying, Drew, I have no other option. Things have gotten so expensive. They're tapping in to their retirement accounts or 401ks. Those accounts are not supposed to be used until you retire. Vanguard tracks 5 million accounts. They found that nearly 4% of people are now making what they call hardship withdrawals compared to about 2% before the pandemic. One other indicator, this we'll talk about again at some point in the future. Fox Business was reporting on data from a real estate tracker called Atom, A-T-T-O-M, which found that there were 33,000 properties in February with foreclosure filings. And that includes default notices, scheduled auctions, and bank repossessions. So that's an 8% increase from February of last year, though it's down about 1% from the previous month. One final thing, and we'll tap into Peter's expertise. You can join me, too. If you want to dial in, feel free to pick up the phone. It's 888-914-9149. That number's good all day long. MoneyWise was reporting that people with incomes of 150K a year, right? If you're making 150 Gs, you're living paycheck to paycheck. That's what they said. They said people with that level of income, they too are living paycheck to paycheck, and depending on credit cards, you know, those are racked too. A lot of people were relying on credit cards to help them get by month to month. In fact, the credit card debt in the country has gone up higher since the start of the year. People have added about $8 billion worth of debt on top of the $1 trillion that we had in December. So, you know, a lot of people would say, hey, the economy's great. You got to look at where people are and how it's hitting them at home. I hope the Biden administration gets this right. I really, really do for all of our sake. I hope whoever is in office next is able to see things clearly and really bring some reprieve to the great suffering that a lot of Americans are going through economically. I'm joined today by somebody who eats and breathes and sleeps this stuff. His name's Peter Grandis. He joins me just about every other week here. And you can check him out at his website, petergrandis.com. He provides guidance on matters of finance through petergrandis.com. Very generously had, during our last pledge, I've offered anyone who made a $250 pledge or more an hour of his time, which was a tremendous gift. But you can also read his story. He wrote a book called Confession of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid, and it's a good tale. It's highly endorsed, too. A lot of people put their names to the back of the book. Peter, good to have you with me. Welcome back.
Good to always be with you, Drew. Thank you.
So, you know, I want to start with 401k with withdrawals first, before we talk about even foreclosures. That, to me, is very telling, and I love your analysis of it. For somebody to say, either my credit cards are racked or I can't afford the rate they're going to be charging me, they're going into their retirement savings in an effort just to live. One, does it surprise you? And what else does that reveal? What else does that tell as you see it?
Well, it tells really two different tales. There's about somewhere between 5 to 15% of Americans who can continue to do rather well. At the very top of that part of that pyramid, some are doing extremely well, even after the COVID crisis. Then you get to where the bulk of Americans are. 65% of Americans are working paycheck to paycheck. And if you imagine for a moment, as you duly noted, a third of all people making $150,000 are still only managing to go paycheck to paycheck, when you normally see in most states the average income is somewhere between $40,000 and $80,000, depending on which state, et cetera, et cetera. So here are people making twice the norm, and they too are living paycheck to paycheck. Now, the 401k things have...
Before you go 401k, Peter, before we dive back into that, let's talk 150k. And maybe that's not an anomaly. You know, I think if somebody's making $50,000, they might live paycheck to paycheck. If they're making $100,000 or $150,000 or $200,000 or $300,000, people, do they tend to live within their means, or do they tend to say, I got this money, so I'll take the vacation or buy the new car? I think human nature in some respects, sometimes people just tend to spend everything they have.
Well,
is this an anomaly right now that we're seeing this, or is this kind of normal?
No, I think for almost as long as I've been on with you, which is well past a decade, I've told you that in our planning group, still to this day, from normal workers all the way up to the professional athletes I dealt with, 7 to almost 8 out of 10 live a financial lifestyle at least one level above their real finances. And everybody else says, well, how do they do that? Well, like you just pointed out, they borrow outright, or they don't put away for things that they need in the future in order to enjoy something today. You know, I've always told you this, that if you want to know the poster child for what's wrong in America, and this group itself is not guilty, they just happen to be the poster child for it, and that's public storage. A generation or two generations ago, there weren't public storage facilities. Homes were much smaller. People had a lot less stuff. We have too much stuff. We've had this discussion for years. And we've also been sold on a lifestyle of keeping up so-called with the Joneses. And I see that all the time. And I see that from people just getting by all the way up to professional athletes. And give you an example. One of the last years that I worked with the Giants, there was a Giant player who made tens of millions of dollars. And a young man came in maybe 6th to 7th round. So he got a few $100,000 as a signing bonus, and that was his salary. And for a young kid at that age, it's great, but in the realm of things compared to the other man, he was way off. But he tried to live that same lifestyle. The guy with all the money bought a home. This guy couldn't afford it, so he paid a lot of rent to live down the street from him. The other guy bought a Mercedes. Well, younger kid couldn't buy it, but he leased the Mercedes. And so there's this trying to keep up with others, or what the world somewhat tells you is really been more than a generation. And what we've had now is we've never had, first of all, our country's the least example. You and I both already have had this discussion, how badly run we are from a financial standpoint. We've borrowed up to the point where we're going to have difficulty even paying our interest. We're just completely out of hand on all matters of finance. And what do the younger people have to look for? Who do they have guidance from? People who have been spending out of their, way out of it. Kids follow what parents did. And show me a kid that's lived upon his means, and I'll tell you, I can show you a family that's been living beyond its means. So it's a generational thing, and it's also, I think, a lack of moral principles and, more importantly, spiritual principles that once people counted on. I always tell you this, and I always try to get this to people. There's more in the Bible about matters of money and finance. There's more verses than there are about heaven or hell. So the creator of that Bible, and when I talk secular, I say to people, whether it was smart human beings or was gifted from God's thinking, they saw how important money was going to be. And guess what? By the way, what's the one thing there isn't a positive verse about in the entire Bible? And that's debt. There's just nothing but warnings and concerns about what happens. And we're a society that took debt to the limit and beyond, and that's what we're facing now. And so those $150,000, yeah, like somebody's making $50,000 going more. If I was making $150,000, I'd be okay. The problem is when that 50 does go to 150, they just increase their lifestyle. They don't keep the old lifestyle and park away them now the extra money because they want to enjoy what the world is telling them what they need to enjoy.
It's so true. It's so sobering, right? I think everyone could do some self-evaluation in terms of what they're doing with the providence that God has given to them. 401ks, I'll get back to that. And foreclosures, too. I mean, if my heart goes out to anyone who's struggling with losing their home. I mean, that's devastating. They're on the rise. But the 401k thing really was a sobering thing for me when I heard people tapping into that, because that means either their credit card's completely racked or, you know, this is their last course of, or this is maybe an alternative decision or their last course. I don't know what the percentage is for people putting money back in there. I mean, you can temporarily borrow from it in a hardship, but if you are in a bad cycle, that's probably not likely. So just a snapshot, if you could, as to what you see happening right now in the country with 401k borrowing.
Well, besides that, what's going on, a lot of people are not maximizing their 401k because their monthly needs for however they're living their lifestyle, they're using that money instead of saving, you know, for the eventual retirement. And that's another issue that doesn't get as discussed as much. But let's not forget, the bottom 50% of income earners now, 35% of them are now using credit cards just to pay for absolute necessities, food, gas, dwelling, et cetera. And that just keeps rising sharply. So it's no longer just a small amount of people, but it's being now more and more people. And you don't have to look anywhere past any local food bank. Just talk to them. They'll tell you they double, triple, quadruple the amount of people coming for that and other types of support, and people of wage levels that have increased that need that help. And that's, like I said, is it's a two-tier system. You know, if you turn on and just watch a financial network all day and listen to those, you know, 10 or 15% that are on, they're making that lots of money. But they're not living in the real world. In the real world, you just can go to anywhere now in the United States. It's not just in big cities. It's in rural America as well. A lot of people are struggling just to keep their head above water.
Yeah, it's unfortunate and it's tragic. My heart goes out to them. On a separate note, and you know, I don't know if you can even speak to this or not. I Bitcoin is just baffling me. You know, it had been up at 45 or 50,000 at one point, and then I remember it came way back down again. Or maybe it was up to 60, and it went down to 30-something thousand a coin. The latest number I saw this past week, and it could be higher or lower, I haven't checked it in a couple of days, it was $72,000, $73,000 of Bitcoin. What's going on with crypto? Are companies like Vanguard or Schwab or other major, you know, brokerages and banks and institutions, are they getting on board? Is there credibility with that currency now?
So let me give you the quick history of my involvement in it. When it first came out, I told everybody, treat it like a penny stock. You want to toss dice, you want to buy it, go ahead. Finally, when it ran to near 65,000 the first time a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. I just said, that's enough. I mean, this thing is really becoming a hype story. And I start to talk about, there's no way people are going to buy real. There was, if you remember, you can buy real estate online. I mean, it wasn't real estate you were going to own. You were just going to own it online. And art, and you remember all the celebrities. And I said, you better get out. It's going to collapse. And it did. And then last July, I talked and wrote about it and spoke about it extensively. I said, you know what's happened here? There's still most of the Bitcoin. And by the way, I call it BitCon, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Most of it is still held by a small percentage of people. I said, the only way those people are going to get out, this is written by me last July, they're going to need another promotional campaign. But this time, the reason I think they can take it higher and longer is Wall Street's getting behind it because they see that they can make money on it. And there isn't all the competitors. So much was lost in that first go around. There were so many coins. I don't know if you remember all the crazy names that were coming out. And people were telling you, I bought it at 2 cents. It's 30 cents. They're gone. That's money lost. It's not. It doesn't even have a chance to come back. So the small is small. The field is smaller. So I said I thought it would get to 50,000 by Christmas, and it did. But I said they're going to use this thing that they call, and it's too long to explain, called a halving. It's an event that happens every few years in the Bitcoin world. And until that time, with Wall Street behind it, it's going to be hyped up because they need distribution. That's the history of Wall Street. Mm. It needs to distribute once it gets a large position in something to the lesser people. And to call this thing a replacement for something like gold that worked for 2,000 years and all, when you just pointed it out, the volatility in itself, it's down to 68,000, was at 73,000. As a trustee, I could never put somebody in anything like that that has that volatility, that's looking for preservation of capital. But it is being promoted. And let me just tell you this. There's a certain person, and it's well-known, Mr. Fink, that runs BlackRock.
Yeah.
5 years ago, he called it the worst thing, or it was criminal. I wouldn't touch it.
Wow.
Suddenly, it's suddenly the biggest thing since sliced bread. Now, nothing changed in the technology. Nothing changed in the concept of Bitcoin. The only thing that did change is BlackRock introduced the biggest exchange-traded fund, which is seeing record volume, and they're making hundreds of millions of dollars from it. And I'll just tell you this. This is the type of thing when it gets to the level when somebody's if people were talking like this about gold, I'd be getting out of gold. But when all the people are now back with this and everybody's predicting 500,000, a million, et cetera, et cetera, that's when you got to look for the exit. But I don't think it reaches its peak until they get through this halving process. After that, if someone would still own it, I would encourage them greatly to think about selling it.
So speaking of gold, Peter, gosh, that's skyrocketing too. What's going on with gold? Is gold going to go even higher?
Well, you know, I would hope you say on the air and off the air, one thing about Grant, that he never pats himself on the back when I speak to him, but I am going to pat myself here because I made a drastic change. As you remember, at the end of 2021, I felt that the stock market and bonds, and people were shocked when I said about bonds, we're not going to be able to outperform gold. So I personally didn't tell anybody else to do it, but I said physical bullion, I think he's going to outperform stocks and bonds for at least the next 3 years. Well, guess what? If you go and look today at the prices, if you took from January 1st, 2022 to now, gold has outperformed the stock market and the bond market.
Wow.
And there's a couple of reasons that's happened. One, central banks around the world are buying gold at record levels. They just continue to do. I believe, as the discussion we've had, and we never will have enough time to get into it today, but that's because banks around the world are recognizing that there's changes afoot where countries are now forming together to have trade pacts and other types of understandings, leaving the United States out, which will leave the dollar out. So there's going to be an eventual change in the monetary system. The dollar is not going to be used in the way it once did and all. And until such time they feel that they have enough of that to offset their dollar holdings and all, gold can work its way higher. That's the single biggest reason for what gold is doing. And I've said from when it was 1,300, I felt that 2,500 to 3,000 is probably the level where they're going to be happy to have it at that point in time. So it's done okay. It's worked for a couple of thousand years. I feel a lot better with that for something that I know historically, for whenever period of time, whatever you needed, food, clothing, shelter, gold at that time was able to be used and be able to buy that need. That's a store of value, not something that trades from 16,000 up to 70,000, back to 20,000, up to 70,000. I mean, if you're a speculator and a gamble, that's exciting, but that isn't where you put conservative safety or principal capital.
My guest today, Peter Grandage. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Robert's in Long Beach, California. Robert, hi, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
I have a lifetime. My degree is back in economics, and I'm looking at the debt and realizing that the debt is benefiting people like Soros, and they're the ones putting money into all kinds of anti-Catholic things. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I can hear you. I think that's a very interesting insight.
So I don't know. Nobody seems to be paying attention to this.
Yeah.
At all. So I think people should be really pushing their, you know, the government to balance the budget. You know, if you took, you borrow $1,000 and you give it to a poor person, and then you pay 30 years interest on that dollar, that $1,000, and it all benefits these wealthy people who actually are very anti-Catholic, like Soros.
Well, Robert,
nobody ever seems to point to that at all.
Let's get Peter's take on that as well. Thank you for your call. I am grateful for it.
Hey.
Good to hear from you. Peter, your thoughts?
I'll agree with him this much. Soros is no fan of our Catholic faith, yeah. And I believe in any faith, to be honest with you. But Wall Street does its best effort, and I know that because I've, in one hand, have struggled because I put my faith front and center and wear it on my sleeve. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take, or it avoids at all costs to tie faith into matters of money, which is really ironic because so many people who are still of faith, Catholic and Protestant, who basically might have different interpretations of parts of the Bible, but we all basically have a lot of the same similar beliefs, go against the very teachings of Scripture on how they're handling the money based on what financial people are telling them. And that's why there's so few people that actually openly do it in that regard, because it's something that I can just tell you firsthand for, especially for the last 20 of my 40 years. The only way three people think of you, Drew, a third think you're a charlatan.
Yep.
A third really don't care. Hey, if you can make me money, Mr. Grange, I don't care what you do. And then about a third go, boy, I'm glad I found you. Many times it's only because they've gone through something that's pretty, pretty bad, and they finally think they found someone, that's at least dealing with integrity and all. But sometimes people don't get a chance to even have that second chance.
I sit here and we're looking at everything from 401ks to people making six figures living paycheck to paycheck to foreclosures to crypto. Yet I hear the administration, they come out, I feel like they're gaslighting us, telling us the economy's doing great. Inflation's under control. Although I did hear Janet Yellen, she was pressed in an interview recently. They asked, you did say it was transitory, right? And she realizes, well, it's really not transitory inflation. And she amended her position on that. What do you make of the financial leadership in this country and those, the executive levels who are telling us, you guys just don't see it yet. The economy's doing great. Inflation's under control. You're going to see it. How do you interpret what they're saying?
Well, they are gaslighting you. Two, what's interesting, I think more important to that for me anyway, because the dire outlook that I have, some really titans of business and Wall Street are coming out now openly talking about that this debt situation is now totally out of control. I mean, we're growing the deficits now at $3 to $4 trillion a year. Yeah. We're going to get to the point where in less than 7 years, we're going to be challenged to pay the interest. Forget about ever paying back the principal and all. But we are being gaslighted. But understand this, 10 to 15%, like I said earlier, are still benefiting from that. So they like those stories. Keep telling those stories. I'm making a lot of money off it. Thank you very much. But unfortunately, the vast amount of people who don't get heard, as those groups do, they're the ones that are really, really struggling. And more, all those things that you statistically pointed out are all showing that more people are hurting, not getting better.
Yeah. Todd's in Henderson, Nevada. Todd, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Yes, my question is regard to monetary policy and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department when it comes to the national debt of $34 trillion. It seems like when Republicans get in there, there's tax benefits for the one percenters. And then when the Democrats get in there, it's just welfare spending out of control. How will the deficit ever be reduced?
Well, personally, I don't think we're ever going to reduce it. What we got to get to the point is we got to stop increasing it. We're going to get to the point the Congressional Budget Office, the last bastion of somewhat bipartisanship left in Washington, has come out now and said we're going to be at $54 trillion in less than 10 years. You put just a 5% interest on that, that's $2.5 trillion in interest expense. Last year, this country took in $5.3 trillion. Now, that may grow a little bit in a few years, but we're going to be looking at almost half of all our income going to pay interest expense. We won't be able to operate as what we've grown used to as a country. And that's why I think those titans and others are recognizing that, too. And it's one of the reasons, Drew, that even though people don't like hearing it, and I've been called the Noah's Ark of the 21st century, but I really just think that, time is running short, and the gentleman is right. There is no leadership now willing to talk about that.
That's Richard. Peter, I have to just take a quick pause. I hope you can hang out because I also want to talk to you a little bit about the Eucharist. I know that faith is such a big part of the way you look at the world, and these can be troubling times. There's a lot of fear that comes. When we come back, we can grab maybe a few more telephone calls. But I certainly want to talk to you about the remedy for a lot of this. And if you want to get in, the number is 888-914-9149. My guest, Peter Grandage. Check him out at Peter Grandage and Company. All right? Check him out at his website. And you can send him an email. It's petergrandage.com is a website, petergrandage.com. Peter, what's your email? Is it peter at petergrandage.com?
Yeah, and best thing is they can look at that Twitter, and we also have a YouTube channel.
Oh, check out the YouTube channel. And Grandage is G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H if you're trying to track it down. Short pause, and I'll be right back. Stay with me.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
Sponsor of the University of Dallas. The Catholic University for Independent Thinkers invites high school juniors, seniors, and recent graduates to study the great books this summer at UD's two-week-long Arete program while earning 3 hours of college credit. Info at relevantradio.com/UDallas.
I think for many people, what we believe about the Eucharist is so remarkable. I mean, to say that this piece of bread, that this chalice filled with wine literally becomes God. It takes an enormous amount of faith to say that, because the Eucharist still tastes like bread and wine, still looks like bread and wine.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, that's thanks to the Diocese of Madison, Wisconsin, for producing a video series called Dare to Believe, which will, if you check it out, I think it'll increase your love for Jesus and the Most Holy Eucharist. I want to talk about that for a moment with my guest, Peter Grandage, as well. You know, we often talk to him about finances, but he wrote a book. It is worth the read. I think God is always reaching out to us. So often, the world is a very powerful allure, money, title, fame, whatever it may be. But it always rings hollow. In the end, the only thing that really satisfies, in the end, the only thing that really resonates, in the end, the only thing that really fulfills is God. You know that. I know that. Peter learned that kind of the hard way. He made millions, lost millions. He has very publicly come on this radio program, talked about his fight with depression. He is a man who is a convert to the Catholic faith. And I think that's part of a story that's worth hearing. And Peter, let's pick it up on that point. You know, we've been talking a lot about the Eucharist and Eucharistic revival, which is coming up. But for those who may not know, bring us back in time. Tell us a little bit of your story. And then I'm always curious for converts. You know, the thing that must be most exciting is receiving the Eucharist for the first time. So fill us in on what that was like and share a little bit of your story.
Sure. So born to a non-practicing Jewish mom and Catholic father, baptized and then left completely alone, not an ounce of any talk of God, until I would meet my future wife, who was born and raised in Ireland, to be married in Ireland. So I went through my, first confession and confirmation at age 23. It wasn't a movement at that point because of the faith. It was just so I could marry this girl, and which I did. And then I entered Wall Street. I never had any formal training. I didn't finish high school, and had a fast-paced career, and really was more of a C&E type Catholic. Even though I went to Mass regularly, I maybe focused on my faith at Christmas and Easter, until in late 1990s I would suffer the first of three debilitating bouts of depression. And then I would meet this man. In fact, that's how I, believe it or not, indirectly came to the show. He was a new Catholic evangelist. Tom, your producer, was writing his book. He told Tom about me. Tom told you about me. And believe it or not, that's how I ended up getting on. But only in the year the new millennium started did I start to put myself into my faith. And I did so at the same time by starting a Christian financial advisory service for athletes with a former New York Giant running back. And at the time I was a Jet fan, and I remember joking to him, "Well, I know there must be a God, because I used to for you to drop the ball and die, and now I'm a business partner with you." But my faith became more involved there, but still not fully into it. But I started to, in 2001, do Bible study in chapel with the New York Giants, and then to a lesser extent with the Yankees. I became very friendly with their chaplain. And although he was a man of Protestant, he was very open and actually welcomed me into the group and had me even share my Catholic perspectives to the players. So there I was weekly doing Bible study and chapel services and fellowshipping with ball players and everything. And then in 2008, right after the Giants won the Super Bowl, I fell off the cliff this time, but not for any of the normal reasons, just suddenly became depressed. And when I finally came out of that one is when I really finally let go of the things that were turned out to be bondage in my life. And part of that was the love of money. And that's God is really correct in Matthew, where he shares about it. You can't love me and money. You got to really pick one. Doesn't mean you pick one, you can't have the other, but you really have to put him first. And it really expanded there. Things went really, really well. But then 2 years ago, and it'll be 2 years this Monday, my dear friend died suddenly, and he was everything in my life. Like he was one of the few full-time Catholic evangelists in the country. And I went into a bout of depression this time where I literally felt there was no reason to keep living. And people would wonder why, because if you looked at what my life was, I had enough money. I had a house, car, a wife, a lovely child, and yet there it was. And that's part of the things that have not yet been fully accepted in our society, that depression is a mental illness, but it's just like any other illness, even though we kind of frown on it because we can't actually see something that's wrong. Like if your arm was broken or we were missing something, or they gave a blood test and they can point and go, see, you have too much of this or that. Depression is very debilitating, and it's very frustrating also because you can still think, but you can't think right. And I made it a point and have always to be open about it because no one jumps up when you speak at these things. Hey, Mr. Granich, I have it too. But later on, the calls and emails and things come, and then you share. And that's why, you know, I make everything free, the book, everything. You know, you don't even have to give an email for it. Because when you do have that, you feel like, oh, I must be the only one. And, you know, all of that, by the way, I'm sure Father will tell you this, all of that comes from the enemy. None of that comes from God. God doesn't want us in any way, shape, or form. But that's the crack that we give to the enemy to come in there and tell us all those things. And it's been a battle. And if you like, I'll just lead to how that takes me to the, you know, to what the Eucharist is to me.
Please, too. Peter, please.
So I always argued that, you know, Jesus gave himself up to us, obviously, and the Eucharist was the spiritual nourishment he wanted us to have. And he did it simply because he loves us for no other reason. And so we eat the body and drink the blood of Christ. We become united. That's what it's all about to me. And we do this through God's humanity that he's, you know, provided to us. So like I told you, I worked for 20 years with professional athletes in Christian sports ministry, and the majority of players were Protestant faith, and they tend to be more open and chest-beating about their faith than some of the Catholic players. And so I would hear from time to time from some of the Protestant players when they knew my Catholic faith. They said, well, don't you want to have a personal relationship with God? And I would say to them, well, let me give you John 6:56, which says, whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me and I in him. And I would conclude, Drew, by then saying to them, I do that at Mass, and I don't think I could be more personable with Christ at any other part of my life than that. Now, some would then still follow up and go, but that's like a ritual that you're going through. And I would respond by noting, let me just tell you this. The Eucharist is the most important sacrament of the seven. And why I would tell them that is no others do we actually receive the very blood, body, and soul of the divinity. But the graces that come from it, from the reception of Holy Communion, you can go on endlessly giving stories from saints all the way down to common people what has happened around the Eucharist. And so where I kick myself, and I know there's going to be people listening that are going to say this too. When we go up to Mass, we receive, and by the time we're done and we're outside, we realize, you know, I really was not thinking of that. I was thinking about job. I was thinking about the kids. I went up through the whole motion, and I didn't focus on what was happening. And what really troubles me is especially when it's exposed, how people still carry on. What I try to focus on myself is not to chat. It's not the time to turn to the wife and ask her something and all, but to stay fully focused there. And I think if we do, I think we get so much more out of mess. Even if everybody else around us isn't, we need to focus on that.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. Peter, I'm very grateful for your time and for your witness. It's eloquent and it's beautiful. What would you say to somebody who's thinking about becoming Catholic? And how has entering the faith really transformed your life?
Well, I think the sacraments are the keys. I think they were given to us because it's kind of like in order to keep a car running, you have to keep doing certain things to it. You got to change the oil, you got to put new tires on differently at the times and all. I think we have to have that. I think church has to be more just going down a Sunday, singing some songs and just, you know, assuming, well, that's all we got to do. I'm just waiting to go to heaven. Life is too challenging. My friend Bill, who I talk daily about, the Catholic evangelist, used to say in his missions that life really only has three stages. You're going in the forest, you're in the forest, or you're coming out. The only one that's half enjoyable is coming out. But the bad thing about the coming out, you already know sooner or later you're going to be going back in.
That's right.
And that's the big challenge.
Amen to that. Well, Peter, thank you for being here. A lot of people have questions for you online, and they want to know how to get in touch. You provide guidance on matters of finance for your company, Peter Granich & Company, right? Best way to email you is...
The best thing is just go to the website, petergranich.com. If you take the time, everything's explanatory. There's a link called Resources there where you can read the book online for free. You can read all my booklets about matters of finance and how they're related to Godfrey. You don't even have to give an email. We don't even know you're there. If somehow after that they read something and they want to find something out more, they can certainly email me. But I believe the blessing that I've been given and reasons to go through this is to be here for this day, that there's somebody listening right now, Drew, that this conversation we had is directional for them and is going to influence their life for the better.
I love it. Well, Peter, thank you for all that you do. Good to talk with you. We'll catch up again soon, okay?
All right. God bless, brother.
God bless you. It's Peter Granich. You can check him out, petergranich.com. That's the website. Go read the book. It's free. You don't have to put in your email. If you want to sign up for his emails, you get some insight, you can certainly do that. It's petergranich.com. His email directly, if you want to say, hey, Peter, I got a question, it's peter@petergranich.com. peter@petergranich.com. I have to take a short pause. When we come back, Father Rocky has a message for you, and I've got an interesting story to share. Stay with me.
Live, coast to coast, the Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Prayerfully consider a career where you can blend your faith and profession. Catholic Order of Foresters, our sponsor, is hiring agents in your market now. Go to relevantradio.com/forester. That's relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
I ended up falling into the wrong crowd.
Have you been away from the faith for a long time?
I've started listening to Relevant Radio.
You're welcome here.
I believe God is forming you.
The Drew Mariani Show is live and here for you now.
God can use you wherever you are.
On Relevant Radio.
Stumbling across the channels and found this one. All I decided to call.
It's like the prize, sunrise, waiting on the other side of the darkest.
I did not grow up with a denomination, but as I got older, I really gravitated towards something about the tradition. And I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it draws me.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. I want to talk about the Eucharist for a few moments here. I think about maybe 10, 12 minutes to hang out with you. I'd love to hear your story. And if you've had a Eucharist encounter, Peter has. We spoke a little bit earlier today with a woman who actually received a healing as a result of the Eucharist. I'm going to share with you some of Father Rocky's information. He's got a powerful message for you coming up. I want to get you plugged into that. But I'd like to hear your story, too. You can dial in right now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Maybe you had a conversion. Maybe you had a healing. Maybe there was a miracle in your own life. Maybe there was a revelation that came to you. Again,
I have a small window to hang out with you, so feel free to dial in if you'd like to join us. And let me also invite you to something that I think is going to be life-changing. I think it's going to be transforming. I'm super excited about it. I'm going to be there with my colleague, Patrick Madrid, and Father Rocky, and all of my network colleagues here. And we're going to be going to the National Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis in July. And I hope you can make it. I'm going to give you a website. I hope you'll check this out. It's relevantradio.com/indy. relevantradio.com/indy. And there's a ton of info there. I'll fill you in on a little bit more details. But first, let me share with you this message from Father Rocky.
Hi, this is Father Rocky in the beautiful new chapel of the Proclamation in Lincolnshire, Illinois, the headquarters of Relevant Radio. It took us 3 years to build this beautiful chapel, and it's part of our response to promote devotion to the Holy Eucharist as part of the national revival of the Holy Eucharist. And the culmination of that will be this summer at the National Eucharistic Congress in July in Indianapolis, July 17th through 21st. Relevant Radio will be there as a presenting sponsor, and we expect tens of thousands of people to participate in the Congress with Mass every day. And before Mass every day, we're going to have the Family Rosary Across America live. There will be beautiful liturgies, time for adoration, inspiring talks, and many, many happy Catholics from around the country and hundreds of bishops. So if you want to find out more about it or sign up, go to our website, please, relevantradio.com/indy. It'll tell you all about it. Nothing like this has ever happened in the church in my lifetime before in the United States. The last National Eucharistic Congress was 83 years ago, and I don't think there's any other National Eucharistic Congress taking place anywhere in the world this year. I hope to see you at the National Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis. It'll be a time of great grace for the whole church. Let's all show up for Jesus.
Yeah, I hope you'll show up. We're going to be there. It's going to be great. I put a quick disclaimer. Maggie probably will not be. I had Maggie, a listener, call me and say to me, "Hey, Drew, you better correct that promo that's running. I hear Maggie's going to be there."
No.
You're going to be, what, 9 months pregnant at that point in time?
Yeah, I probably will have given birth or will be giving birth like during that week. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm sorry you're not going to be able to make it. I'd love to have you there. My wife's going to be coming. I know Patrick Madrid is going to be there. I think Nancy, his wife is coming, and everybody's going to be there.
So awesome.
It's going to be an incredible, incredible event. In fact, Father Rocky and Patrick and I'm going to be giving a presentation. Now we've got a breakout session, which is going to be great. The response was so strong, they had to go to a bigger venue because a lot of Relevant Radio family wants to get together, and it will be great to hang out. I think we're going to pray the chaplet at that time. I think we're speaking between 2 and 4. So we'll be doing that live. You can actually join us live, and that will be a
cool
powerhouse event. Father's leading the rosary every night, the rosary is going to be every morning.
Mass,
that's
yeah.
right, right before Mass. So I know we're going to be streaming a lot of this, so I hope you can get plugged into it. But you get more info simply by going to relevantradio.com/indy, and I'll tell you more about it. Maggie, you came back to the faith. I was just listening to Peter talk about his own conversion. You were always Catholic, but you fell away. You became atheist, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
What was it like when you came back, went to confession, and ultimately received the Eucharist again? Was it an encounter?
It was a slow process.
Yeah.
Some people have amazing, open-eyed experiences,
yeah, right,
like once that changed them forever. I think that was part of my early conversion. But then it was a slow climb back into the faith.
Yep.
And the more I learned, the more I realized how little I knew. And,
yeah, so true.
I heard things like people say they would go to adoration, and I'm like, I've never done that before. I don't know what that is. And I started going to adoration, didn't really know what to do. It was very foreign to me, but I found myself wanting to go more and more and more, and wanting to go to confession more and more and more. And then realizing slowly after this process of going to confession and receiving the Eucharist and going to adoration, at some point I looked up and I realized that the things that had been plaguing me for so long, negative thoughts, really bad habits, probably addictions at some point that I was dealing with, had kind of just fallen away, almost without me really noticing. Yeah. And then realizing that it was because of the process of the things that I was doing, it was through God's grace that I actually understood that this is what freedom is, that this is what he does for us, is he frees us from these chains.
Yeah, I think it's so beautifully said, because I look at the Eucharist. When our first parents sinned, right, original sin entered the world, and so did disease, so did physical ailments, so did disorientation. And I think the Eucharist is really the antidote to that great sin. And you said you went before the Lord. What happened? The Eucharist will lead to conversion of heart. Mm-hmm. The Eucharist will lead to healing of the heart. The Eucharist will lead to healing of the body. And we've heard testimonies of miraculous healings that have taken place. But I love what you had to say, because, gosh, who was it? I saw an interesting quote a little bit earlier. I don't think I have it in front of me here. I was reading it, and they talked about just sitting before the Lord. It's a sunbathing in the Lord.
Yeah.
He says, you know, if your heart is icy, or made this comparison to something that was icy, he says, sit before the Son of God in the Eucharist, and all of that will melt away. All those sorrows, all those concerns, go before the Lord. In fact, the Council of Trent, it was famously said that the Holy Communion is the antidote to our daily weaknesses. So if you are away from the Eucharist, I'm telling you, go. If you're troubled, go. Sit before the Blessed Sacrament. Do we have time? I want to play a Father Rocky piece. Do we have time or no? Will it fit? Okay, well, Maggie said we got some great calls online. Let me go to the phones and we'll take a few of your calls at 888-914-9149. And just a quick programming note again, I hope you will come to the Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis, because you talk about being before the Lord, there's going to be adoration, there's going to be processions. It's going to be an event where I think God's grace is going to flow in unparalleled ways. It's going to be just, it's going to be off the charts. Go to relevantradio.com/indy. And if you travel on your own, you can stay there on site across the street, I think, from the convention center. If you travel with Relevant, I should say, you can stay with us. We're going to be there. If you want to make your own arrangements, just go to the website, fill out the form, and you can get all the info that you want. You can learn much more about it there, too. So relevantradio.com/indy, learn more. There's a button there where you can get more info. Joseph is listening to us in the city of West New York, New Jersey. Hey, Joseph, thanks for joining me. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. I have a Polaroid camera, and I take pictures with it, and I do get supernatural pictures. So one day I was in church at Adoration, and I snapped a picture. Believe it or not, in gold letters, Jesus put joy in J's all over the monstrance.
That's awesome.
Beautiful.
I love it. Hey, Joseph, thank you. I appreciate your experience. Cynthia, who's in Cranston, Rhode Island. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I had a dream, July 7, 2021, and a name of a saint was mentioned in the dream, and the name of the saint was Saint Gerard. Mm. The next day I went to the library. I wanted to look up his information. And you know how when you have a dream, you want to try to remember the details. I did not want to confuse St. Gerard with St. Jerome. And what I found out is that he is the patron saint of motherhood.
Right.
And he's also the patron saint of unborn children. But the point of the call to you is that by having that dream, being faithful, spending time alone, listening for God's voice.
Yeah.
I was led to my little sister's grave.
Yeah.
She was stillborn on March 16th, so her birthday, her anniversary will be tomorrow.
I'm sorry to hear that. Hey, I've got to leave it right there, Cynthia. I'm sorry about that. I truly am. I want to thank everyone for allowing me to be part of their afternoon. It's always good to hang out with you. Until our paths again cross, I'll be praying for you. Pray for me. Remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great night.